Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist of billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
Off, and you go back into the arena because it's not about you, it's bigger than you. And honestly, you don't get to give up. You do not get to give up because it's bigger than you. And that's what I want to say about leadership right now. We'll dive way more into it in depth. The next person that we have coming is the one, we need a drum roll for this, the one and only, talk about not giving up and committed, drove overnight after they had so much adversity in the family. The billion-dollar dude, the author of Edgy Conversations. I could go on and on and on and on and on and on and on about this guy. Dan Waldschmidt. Welcome, my man.
Hey, guys. Morning, evening, afternoon. I'm not sure what time zone it is we're in now. Evening, yes, evening, good. So I wanted to take a couple minutes and talk to you all about what I think is probably the single biggest skill that you ever learn. And that is how to make lots and lots of money. Now, anytime you start talking about money, there's several reactions that people have. I was actually with family members this weekend who said at this funeral about someone else in the family, oh, they're not supposed to have money because they're not, God is judging them, or they're not supposed to have money. So one thing that's important to think about with making money is that a lot of what holds us back from making money, whether it's in our businesses, whether it's managing the money that we do have with the jobs we have, is a mindset. So first and foremost, 45 seconds on this. We all have baggage in how we were raised. My great-grandparents, they saved their money. They retired millionaires, but they saved every penny. They were from the Depression. My kids, they can't save 5 cents, right? It's always, but I can buy a game, but I can buy a candy ball, or whatever, the gumball things, right? They don't want to save anything because it's about immediate gratification. We all know facts like this. If between the ages of 22 and 26, that's 5 years, if you save $2,000 a year, that's what, $160 a month for whoever's a human calculator, something like that. It's not much, not much. $2,000 a year sounds like a lot, but when you break it down to months, it's $100+ a month, which is like 20 of these drinks, maybe, right? 1 month of drinks and you've got your money. Absolutely. If you were to save that for 5 years and do nothing else, you would retire at 65, given all the stock market trends that have been years and decades to date, having something like $3.1 million. Now, for those of you who are listening or are gonna watch this on replay, go do your math, just Google it, and you will see how astounding it is. If between the age of 22 and 26, you save a few $100s a month, that's it, you'll retire a millionaire. It's pretty much guaranteed to be. It doesn't matter who's in office, it doesn't matter who's president, it doesn't matter what happens on Wall Street, you will be a millionaire. Now, if between, let's say you wake up at 26, you stretch your arms, you roll out of bed, and you say, oh no, I remember that Dan guy saying I should save some money. I haven't saved, but I'm gonna start now. So the good news is hoorah, right? Hopefully you have many, many years. So let's say between the age of 26 and 66, right? It doesn't take a great mathematician to know that's exactly 40 years. If you save $2,000 a year for 40 years, you would have somewhere like $2.5 million. So here's the science, okay? Here's the science. If you just save a little bit of money right now, like a tiny, 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 tiny little bit of money, what happens is you end up with a whole lot of money later. We know this is compounding interest, right? The first pennies you put in at 22 turn into lots of money, and then money grows and grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. Okay, so I just want to get that out of your head to say money is not hard. There's really, money is this, if you have a job and you're looking to build a second income, or you're looking to take, you know, your job and use it as a launching point for making more money, money is not hard. It's fundamentally this: you have to make some, you have to save some, and you have to invest some. That's it. That's the whole thing with money. So in your business, when you're starting your business or growing your business, whether you're in sales and trying to figure out how to grow more sales, you really have to do three things really well. You have to make money. So if you're stuck not making money, there's a couple things that we're gonna talk about. I can't spend the rest of my time talking about how to invest money or save money. If you're not saving at least 10 to 20% of your paycheck, yes, you should start doing that. Get on your knees and thank dear Jesus that he has given you another day to correct your ways and fix that right now, right? There's no reason why. And what's funny is if you automate the savings, you don't even notice, but then you turn around and look at your bank account one day and you go, holy shit, I've got some money, right? I've got a few pennies to rub together and things aren't so frantic. And guess what happens? We're not as stressed out because we've actually done some things right and taken care of our financial future. Okay, but I can't talk about that now because I'm spending cycles telling you things that your mom already taught you and you know better, and I shouldn't even be wasting any time. So let's talk about how you make more money. Now, as Mark introduced me, I didn't call myself a billion-dollar business strategist. I think it was Forbes or Fortune, one of the places that I've either written for, been written about him, said, Dan works for these big billion-dollar businesses, helping them grow and scale. And so somehow people labeled that. But here's what I want to get across to you and thinking like a billion-dollar business. When you're thinking like Motorola, who's been a client, you're thinking about, you know, a big light health insurance company like Aetna, client, Cisco, client, Oracle, people like this, really, really big clients. What separates them in their growth from a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of stay-at-home people who have just the same level of opportunity and skill is this: how they think about what the goal is. See, for us, we often talk to people and say, Dan, if I could make $300 or $400 a week working from home, right? Maybe you have some friends who've said, if I could replace my income, and I'll say, what's your income? Oh, it's $1,200 a week, gross or net. We go through this whole rigmarole, try to figure out how to replace your income, live the life of your dreams. If I could just replace my income. But see, an Oracle isn't trying to replace $1,200 a month or a week. They're trying to replace $1.2 billion a month in a specific country selling a specific product. And so the numbers are a lot bigger. Here's what you realize when you start working with really, really big companies, really big expectations. If you were to add a zero to that thing you have in your mind about what you expect to make, it's just as easy to make $10,000 a week as it is to make $1,000 a week. Some of you looked at me, I saw a little side eye, I saw some glances. I can't see all of you on the camera, but some of you are looking at me going, huh? So here's the thing to understand about money. What you expect to happen, what you work towards happen, usually happens. If you have to replace a minimum of $1,000 a week and you build a plan, your plan's gonna earn you what? $1,000 a week, because that's what you built your plan to be. And you probably spent $1,000 worth of advertising, whatever that is, maybe it's 10% of that, $100 a month on to help you get to your goal. And the reality is, when you scale out your plan, we don't have a whiteboard, usually I'm in a room with whiteboards and things I can draw on and create a mess. When you start building out your plan for $10,000 a week, all you notice is that all the numbers change. Your marketing changes, your CRM changes, your staff changes. What it doesn't necessarily mean is that it's outside of your reach. What it means is you have to factor it into your plan. Whenever I go into a business, the number one thing I do is I tell whoever's running that division, we are going to grow, hear me out, we are going to grow by 1,000% over the next 12 months. If you've been on my team or you've traveled with me, have heard me in front of a tight-knit group of business leaders, I'll say to them, we are going to grow by 1,000%. And they kind of look at me. I've had some people walk out of the room. I've had some people say, who hired this guy? You know, people standing up and making a big scene. What's going on? How dare you? You're taking our money. You're a charlatan. Here's what's interesting. 12 months later, 15 months later, after all the numbers have come back in, and we look back, what happened? We had a division that was making $15 million that's now making $160 million. One of our clients added $15 billion to their top line. First thing that they did was change their expectations. For most of us, it's not about actually selling things. It's about expecting to reach our goals. And if your goal is the bare minimum, if all you want for yourself is, I just gotta replace my income, you might actually hit your goal and life still sucks, right? And so I would challenge all of you to get started, add a zero. Let me be bold, let me try something else with you. Add two zeros. What if you, instead of making $1,000 a week, you said not just $10,000 or $10,000 a week, I want to make $100,000 a week. I have a friend right now who had a business in the United States and moved to Kuala Lumpur to start this training online business. And he challenged his team. We've been doing about $1 million a year. What if we did $1 million a month? Same thing, eyes rolling. Guess what his team figured out? That was actually possible. And if you sat down and thought about all the ways things you could adjust, things you could do without, you might be surprised how quickly, when you set your goals at those things, how attainable it actually becomes. Here's what happens. The first time you think about it, you go, I don't know if that's possible. Then a day later, you think about it and you say this, well, if it were possible, this would have to happen. And then you start thinking, and if that were to happen, I might need this guy's help, and I might need to buy that tool. And if I had that, then I could invest into this. And all of a sudden, what happens in a couple of days, if you allow yourself to play gently, just imagine, just dream a little bit about what's possible. All of a sudden, that 10x number, that 1,000% growth doesn't seem so impossible. In fact, it actually seems like you're letting yourself down if you don't do it. So dream a little bit bigger too. Here's what I'm gonna challenge all of you. We're not weird enough. We're not. Well, it's hard being weird. But guess what? You know what the best ideas are? The weirdest ideas. Who would have thought if you were to go shopping for furniture that you would go inside a beautiful showroom, you'd look at everything put together like this, and then you would say, you know, I think I like this. This looks nice. This looks good. I better not knock it over. This looks wonderful. I want to take this home. And the sales guy were to say, fantastic. And he takes a big hammer in his hand. He smashes it into little pieces. He gets a cardboard box, puts it all inside the cardboard box, and says, oh, I forgot. Takes a tiny tool. The hammer he used was this big. The tiny tool he gives you was this big. Drops inside the box, puts some instructions inside. You go put it together at home. But IKEA, right? They have a fabulous showroom. It's nicely priced hardware furniture. They do the exact same thing, $17 billion worth of furniture, telling us to do the that we expected them to do for us. What about Southwest Airlines? You go on Southwest and you have somebody rapping through all of the announcements, making it fun and playful. Do you know that for 17 consecutive quarters, business quarters, right? You hear Google stock, quarterly announcement came out. So every quarter they announce their findings to all of us and hopefully tell us how amazing they are. Make us feel guilty for not investing more into them. For 17 consecutive quarters, Southwest lost money. Now, I lose money for a month. My wife's all up in my business, right? Maybe 2 months, we gotta have a talk. If I go one quarter and we're losing money and things are going bad, I'm kind of joking. It's my 14-year anniversary yesterday, so I get a little bit of liberty to make jokes about my wonderful wife. But if I start losing money at all, things go bad. Imagine convincing your shareholders, imagine convincing your board of directors, we've got this great, amazing company built on something weird called customer service. We're gonna have fun. What if flying could be fun again? One quarter and two quarters and three quarters and four quarters and five quarters. We could do this, but I'm running out of time. 17 quarters later, they finally made money. And guess what? Of all the airlines, we had to merge them because we were going bankrupt. Some filed for some protections and did some things that were, you know, maybe we could frown upon them not paying people, right? So they could get back to profitability. And Southwest kind of puttered along and has never lost money after those 17 quarters since. And so all of us, here's what I've realized, in every group, in every meeting I'm ever at, in every big company I go and speak to, there's a weird idea that does not get done. Somebody's got a great idea for something they can sell from their home, or some juice mix that they love, that their friends love, that they never go take to market. Someone who's great at woodworking who could turn it into a company, but he somehow says, that's a little too weird. And here's what I would challenge all of us, is that the weirdest ideas are the ideas that have the greatest potential. So what is that weird idea for you? What's that one thing you've been thinking about, but you haven't done? Those are the things that when we invest into, put our effort into, that end up having the greatest return on investment for us. I challenge you, take time, think about what's the weirdest thing I could do. Let me also share one inside secret with you. When I help really big companies negotiate, do you know why I push for them to do a weird thing? Because no one else is going to do it. That's the funny thing about the weird ideas. Everyone else is scared to be weird, right? That whole thing about the nail that sticks up, what gets pounded back in, right? The weird ideas also leave you less room for competition because people aren't fighting you to be weird. They're like, oh, I have to go out and go be extra weird. No, they're saying, I'm gonna let those people be weird, and if they make money, I'm gonna follow them. And your weirdness actually turns into crowd building because people behind you say, oh, they have a head of steam, let me get behind them. But guess what? They'll never catch you. They'll never catch you because they didn't have the stones to start being weird. And guess what? They probably won't find them following you. So be weird. Number three, I would say this. Listen, we have to do a better job at telling ourselves no. So Robert Goddard was an amazing astrophysicist. For those of you who know, he invented the shuttle that does engines, rockets that fly into space. And a couple hundred times he built rockets, and they did that thing, if you have kids, you know, you pump up the thing and it with water, it flies, and it does something like this, like, and then eventually falls onto your house or maybe your neighbor's house, and it's, you're like, okay, let's go do this again. And you may try it 100 times, but it's still gonna be a big, big mess. And that's what happened to Robert Goddard. Robert Goddard was successful eventually, because he did one thing. He made rocket ships. He didn't sell candy. He didn't work the front desk at an IKEA store. He didn't study to become a doctor. He didn't write books. He didn't go lecture. You know what he did? He made rocket engines. Now here's what's about some one thing that's really painfully horrible, but awesome about being human, is that we are curious and we love to do things that make us interested, right? We love to, oh, look at this, it's shiny, I'm gonna try this. We have to do a better job at telling ourselves no. Here's what that means. Not just saying no, building our lives in such a way that we can't say yes. If you have a television in your home and you've got 300 cable channels and you have teenagers, guess what they do? You say, clean your room, and they go, sure. I just have a teenager as of like a couple weeks, so, right? I mean, what do? Clean, I'll get to it, and they hit the button. Now guess what? If you don't have the cable channels, can they actually hit the button and watch something? They can't, why? Because it's not there. Our lives are full of things. We need new phones, we need new gadgets, we need new toys. I have to do this, I have to do that. And we distract ourselves completely, and then we say things like this, I wish I had more time. You have enough time. Because in the same time that you have and I have and other people have, someone else is making money. Someone else is getting rich. Someone else is executing their plan. Someone else is doing something awesome. And then we're left going, I wish I could be that guy. And you could be, but you haven't put in the time. Okay, let me also share one last secret with you. And under our questions and answers, we can flesh out some more of this. I know I'm throwing some really weird things at you, but these are things that actually work. Be human. Here's what's interesting. I remember it was 2007. I had a BlackBerry. Anyone else have a BlackBerry, right? These were these amazing smartphones of the day, right? We were like, we were awesome because we had a keyboard on our phone. It was amazing. 2007, something happened that had never happened before with BlackBerry. They went down. The service went down. Not in the United States. Went down in the Middle East. Went down in Asia. There were some parts of the world that went down. Day one, BlackBerry was like, we're working on it. And day two was also silent, we're working on it. By day three, the CEO of BlackBerry came on in front of the TV, and he said something like this, face very serious. He was like, we uphold the greatest standards, meanwhile they're still down. He talked about how BlackBerry was the greatest thing in the world and that we are doing everything we can. Here's what he should have said. Hey guys, we f***ed up, something went wrong. Someone hit the wrong lever, wrong button got pushed, service went down. We are doing everything we can to make sure you have a great experience. You know what's interesting? You know what also launched in 2007? iPhone. You know what? BlackBerry never recovered. Could they have recovered? I don't know. We can look back and make all kinds of wild guesses. Would you, could you? But here's what's interesting. We're human. We make mistakes. You know how you solve a complex problem with a prospective customer? I'm sorry. And you say it early and often. Do you know what you say when you want to win over a new customer? You may not say I love you, but you actually care about them. You provide a solution that actually gives them value. You show them that you love. You can make a phone call right now to your cable company or your telephone company or to some other small business in your area, and you can tell in a couple milliseconds whether they love you or not. And then we'll send a mass email to 3,000 people and complain because our open rate was, no one would open my email because you didn't show love to people. And when you change your marketing principles, when you change what you say in an email, when you make it really raw and serious, it's no wonder that when working with clients, I get 50% of people to respond to my emails. Hear me, 50% of people to respond, not open, not click, not pass or forward to one of their friends, respond to one of our emails. Why? Because we believe that when you love people, when you can demonstrate love for people, guess what they do? They want to be around you. They want to do business with you. They want to give you their money. So look, we've talked about a couple things. I'm out of time. I could spend all day with you. Unfortunately, I'm going to get kicked off the stage by clowns with brooms or something. But I want you to think about that. How can you love people so that they give you their money? Look, we love to give our money to people that we love. You're my grandma. Guess what she does? She sends me a $50 check every birthday, right? Because she loves on me. She wants me to have her money. Your prospects will give you their money too if you love them. They will. Do something weird. There's a weird idea you haven't done. You got to jump on that thing. And then look, a lot of the rest of this is just hard work. So if you're not working a 60, 70 hour week, listen, you're not even in the game. So come up here, Mark. Shoo me off stage. Thank you for...
Well, first of all... Okay. The Q&A is going to be, so we're like fire hosing you with stuff. The Q&A is going to be where you can dive way deeper into everything we're
sure,
talking about.
Absolutely.